And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to a late night recording session here for the More Phenomenal Hockey Show. It is I, Michael, being joined from HockeyHotStove.com and the Flyers alumni, Mr. Bill Meltzer. Bill, how you doing tonight, sir?
Doing well. You know, those 8 o'clock starts in the NHL playoffs, they're a little rough when you're there for morning skate until after the game, then wrapping up writing. So makes for a late night, but TV rules the roost. So if the network's at 8 o'clock, it's 8 o'clock. It is. You
know? At least we have gotten Elliot Friedman apologizing for how they do the scheduling of games, because he openly admitted about how they do it for Sportsnet, and he was like, "Yeah, this is on us a little bit for some of these things that we for what we do for TV." But real quick, the More Phenomenal Hockey Show is brought to you by Oats Overnight. When we're on the go but still need breakfast, Oats Overnight is the healthy on-the-go breakfast choice for the show and TXHT Hockey. Use our exclusive link in the description on both TXHTHockey.com and in the YouTube show description to get a $20 discount on Oats Overnight today. And Bill, I know you're a little tired, so maybe some Oats Overnight would be a nice little pick-me-up for you.
Sounds good to me, man.
Alrighty. But speaking about it needing a pick-me-up, you know, this is our first time actually talking about the second round of the playoffs. Obviously, Vegas and Anaheim at the time of recording are tied at one game apiece. Colorado is up 2-0. And Buffalo and Montreal are actually playing in the third period right now, with the Canadiens up 3-1. So it looks like, unless anything, now 4-1, they literally just scored right now as I'm saying this. So if the things stay the same, that will look like a tied 1-1 series. But when it comes to the Flyers, when the Hurricanes, the Carolina Hurricanes are currently leading 3-0. Game 4 is tonight at 6 p.m. We are recording late Friday night, releasing Saturday afternoon. So you're all hearing this before game 4. When you look at needing a pick-me-up, the Flyers, it looked like they had it with game 2 despite the overtime loss. Game 3 happened. It was a penalty-filled game 3. Lots of drama. And, you know, the Hurricanes kind of took advantage of that. What are your thoughts going into game 4?
The biggest thing is Philly cannot afford to chase another game. As you said, game 2 – Flyers get that quick start. Actually, the Flyers had not scored a first period goal in any playoff game till game 2. So they get a quick 2-0 lead. 2-1 at the first intermission, 2-1 at the second intermission. Still 2-1 midway through the third period. Then Seth Jarvis scores. It's tied. The Flyers actually controlled the overtime heavily. It was almost the mirror image, the reverse of game 6 against the Penguins, because the Penguins dominated overtime. Then Flyers had one good shift. Next shift, they win the faceoff and they score and they win the game. But comes out in game 3. And I mean, Flyers had a really good first period, I thought. They had chances very early on. Travis Konechny, Alex Bump, Porter Marton hits the post. And then the Flyers, much of their chagrin, got their first power play of the night. Not a secret to anybody, the Flyers had the worst power play in the league this year. Flyers have had the worst power play in the league most years, not every year, but most years in the 2020s. When not the worst, it's been near the bottom. So that first power play was a momentum killer, as it so often is. Couldn't win the first faceoff, could get entry back in the attack zone, and when they finally did, had trouble getting shots on net, right? So that first period, the momentum stalls a little bit. Carolina gets their first power play of the game. Hey, bounces happen, right? Bounce off the kick plate behind the net, comes right out direct in front onto the stick of Jordan Staal, who scores. That was not intentional. They were not trying to miss the net from there. Just they got a good bounce.
And let's also be honest, leading up to that goal by Jordan Staal did interfere with the flyer behind the net too, which should have been called but wasn't, and that was a part of the reason that led to that goal as well.
We could do an entire show on the officiating in this series and in game three in particular. But yeah, there was some interference there. Happens. Call's not a call, but he got a good, they had a fortunate bouncer. So, Carolina got the bounce, but the Flyers went to that first intermission, thinking, okay, we're not in a bad place here. The penalties at that point were minimal. I guess we're two aside in that first period, but so it's still not crazy, right? Second period, Flyers kind of pick up where they left off, and on a delayed penalty, Trevor Zegras scores a tremendous goal. I mean, the way he was able to position his stick and score from the angle he scored from going upstairs, that was a tremendous play.
Yeah, it was a beautiful snipe that he took to make that 1-1. And after and before that, there was a little moment with Rick Tocchet that kind of fired up Zegras going into that and going into scoring that goal too.
They have a good coach player relationship, because Tock will get on him sometimes, and Zegras, he never gets mad. He doesn't push back on it. He speaks his piece sometimes, but then it's forgotten about. There's no, it's a good kind of pushing, So yeah, Flyers tie up the game, and the other good thing about the delayed penalty, besides the fact of the goal itself, quite honestly, was they did not get a power play, right? Because the power play is a momentum killer for the Flyers. It just so often is. And then the Taylor Hall hit happens on Travis Sanheim. And I think anybody who watched it objectively would tell you, you could certainly make a case for a 5-minute major on it. Things worked out where, Rod Brind'Amour ends up with a bench minor. Really, they kind of bent over backwards a little bit to give the Flyers a 5-on-3 there, because they kind of knew it should have been a 5-minute penalty.
Well, not only that, but they took the entire TV timeout plus additional time coming out of the TV timeout to review the hit. It's like when you're reviewing something that long, it should be very clear as day. Like we've seen reviews where it's like, oh, yeah, that's 5-minute major. Let's move along. Like as quickly, but like the fact that they took almost 2 to 3 minutes to really, because TV timeouts are about 90 seconds, so add that to whatever, that was that you saw on television, that should have been almost clear as day when they watched it from multiple angles. And I think what they said on TV was that Hall, w it looked like when they slowed it down, that Hall made an attempt to slow himself down going into the hit into Sanheim.
I mean, from up in the press box, even some scouts from other teams, oh, that's a five. That's a five. And he lets his feet too. It was just a bad hit. It was a bad hit. Had Travis Sanheim rolled around on the ice like he'd been shot, it would have been a five automatically. Not that it was his mistake, but actually showing that he was okay and getting up, actually, that helped reduce it to a two, honestly. But the Flyers get a 5-on-3. 5-on-3, completely disorganized. They got one shot on goal, but The puck left the zone three times with the two-man advantage, then it's a 5-on-4, give up a 2-on-1, Tatfield scores. Now all of a sudden you're trailing again. You're just on a 5-on-3, and now you're trailing. That was an absolute dagger to the Flyers. And beyond that, the Flyers completely, the rest of the night, completely blew their composure. They were more worried about trying to gain some kind of retribution for the hit, and then it was a penalty box parade. Now, the Flyers got additional power plays, which I said power plays do not work to the Flyers' benefit. But they ended up by the end of the night shorthanded nine times, right? In a must-win hockey game, you have to have a little bit of poise and a little bit of discipline under the circumstance of being a must-win game. So after playing, I think, pretty well the first 36 minutes of that game, it almost kind of reverted to game one, except that was all power plays.
Yeah, and if I remember right, I believe Christian Dvorak had at least two or three of those penalties as
Yes,
well.
which is not typically like Dvorak. He's not usually an undisciplined player, but he just blew his cool.
And one thing that I noticed last night was also Garnet Hathaway. He was put out early and put out often, and he really helped set a tone for the Flyers. So going into game four, you would probably assume, hey, we're going to probably want to put out Hathaway. But, like you said, hey, let's try to keep the composure a little bit because, at this point now, the season's on the line.
Yeah, no, for sure. And just a half circle back here. During the delayed penalty, something happened that surprised me does not happen more often in the NHL or other leagues for that matter. And it makes complete sense. What happened was, you're pressing 6-on-5, and immediately when you're attacking, Emil Andre goes straight for the net from the point as an extra body down near the net. And because what happens, Carolina touches the puck, plays over, right? The penalty is called, the whistle blows. So there's no real risk in attacking the net. Well, that played directly into the goal. And I've often wondered, well, why when you're attacking, the extra guy, particularly, if somebody touches the puck right away or whatever, but if it goes on a little bit, why not send an extra guy right to the net like that? That was just a heads up kind of play. So I did want to point that out because I've often wondered why don't we see that more?
Yeah, and then we got to talk about Dan Vladar. You can't put all of this on him, but there were at least, I think, two goals that he probably should have had. That he like the first goal, for one, it hits off the post, and then because he doesn't take the post as quickly as he could, it hits the post, it hits his foot, and it deflects in the net. And you can kind of see how he reacts to giving up that goal. That he even knew in a way that he should have had that. And then there was another one that I'm trying to remember. I think he also, the way he reacted, he kind of was like, that's another one I should have had. It might have been the third or the fourth goal.
Yeah, I'm
Those
trying
goals
to remember which
aside,
one that is. I'm trying to remember which one that is.
yeah, those goals aside, how would you rate Vladar so far in this series in the three games? Because, again, like I said, you can't put it all on him. But at the same time, how do you think he has fared in this series?
I don't put much of it all on him, honestly. The one that I didn't like was the second goal in the opening game. I mean, yes, you're beat right down the middle in that play. He was really shaded over a little bit too far. Had he protected the short side a little bit better, that's one I didn't like. Other ones, there's traffic swirling around. I don't think anything other than that could be, I would categorize as a goal that he should have had. I think Vladar has been fine. Anderson hasn't been tested as much. But Anderson's been a little bit better when he's had to be. That's what I would say about the goaltending.
Yeah, I mean, I only bring up the thing about Vladar because, you could just kind of see his expressions, like his body expression after certain goals were scored. And being how I used to play goalie for 4 years, I understand those kind of body expressions, like when I give up a certain goal and I go, I probably really should have had that one. So that, and that's why I really wanted to ask that question, because it's like, it's just something I really noticed, especially last night during game three. So going into game four on Saturday tonight, for those listening or watching, what is your game plan if you're the Philadelphia Flyers to at least try to force a game five on Monday?
Well, A, game and puck management starts there. It starts there. If they can replicate, not the end result, but if they can replicate the process from overtime of game two and the first period of game three, you have a good chance, of course, you have to actually finish them, but of actually maybe playing from ahead. Flyers cannot, absolutely cannot chase another game. My concern, Michael, is that a lot of times you'll see the trailing team, the team that's in a desperate situation, come out attacking. Then all of a sudden there's a 2-on-1 or whatever. It's in the net, you're trailing again, and then everything goes to hell from there. Happens all the time. All the time. In fourth wins in a series, Flyers have to not have to chase another game. And obviously preferably play from ahead if they can. Although Carolina is a very good, well, the NHL's best puck possession team and a very good 5-on-5 team, Flyers have actually in the last two games managed 5-on-5 pretty well. So try to keep it, as much as possible at 5-on-5. I mean, the calls are going to be the calls. I do think that whoever the game supervisor is going to say, dial it down a little bit. Don't you have to go up the arm on everything sometimes.
I mean, we already are having two suspensions of players. Ridly Greig got two regular season games from the game four against the Carolina Hurricanes in the first round series. Charlie McAvoy is going to have an in-person hearing on Monday for his two-handed baseball swing slash on Zach Benson of the Sabres. So he's going to get at least six games. So it's and those were both in the final games of those series. So like we don't need the hat trick of potential suspensions from for a team player who has been eliminated from the playoffs.
No, and when frustrations boil over, just dumb things happen. Flyers cannot let that happen. And you can't have veterans leading the wrong way. Right. And I said this on the radio in Raleigh today. I said this on the Hockey Hot Tub Live podcast. I'm not picking specifically on Travis Konecny. I mean, he's led the team in scoring five straight years. He won the Bobby Clarke Trophy as team MVP, a couple of years back to back. Okay. Been in, was the Four Nations, a couple of NHL All-Star games. His playoff career has been a disappointment. Just putting it nicely, okay? Because he's played now in 31 NHL playoff games. He has two goals, 31 games. And it's not like he's racking up the assists either. He has 12 points in 31 games and 50, 5-0 penalty minutes because of misconducts. So taking himself off the ice, dumb retaliatory penalties, just situations where he's hurting his team, and also some puck decisions where one of them is passing up open shots to try to look for backdoor plays. It seems like inevitably the pass gets broken up or misses connections and scoring chance is lost. That's part of it. To missing the net on a breakaway, missing it in another 1-on-1 chance, and in game two and game three, and the other one is just some really low percentage plays going diagonally, maybe back towards the point. Going, I hate going backwards with the puck unless you're absolutely sure. Unless you're absolutely sure, you have a play to make there. We got guys coming in, skating into the puck, whatever the case might be. But so that's kind of the poster child to me for what ails the Flyers in the playoffs. And I thought Porter Martone was terrific. The last two games, had a nice assist on the one Philly goal. last game, so he's figuring things out. That's a positive. But generally speaking, the Flyers wingers, the Flyers' last goal by a winger was Konecny's only goal of the playoffs. It was game four against Pittsburgh. Flyers did not have a goal from the wing in this series. They didn't have a goal from the wing in game five or game six against the Penguins either. And I guess part of it is that Owen Tippett is out, but part of it too is Tyson Forsberg doesn't have a point in these playoffs. Michkov has an assist, but he doesn't doesn't have a goal, right? And you just go right on down the line to get nothing from your wingers. What team is going to win that way? Not very many.
Now, you mentioned Owen Tippett, Bill. How much of an impact not having him in the lineup has played in the Flyers series against the Hurricanes?
I think it's been a significant impact in that Owen's goal scoring is always streaky. Owen goes through spells where he just seems like he can't miss, where he's just scorching hot, taking the puck to the net himself, and scoring some goals also sometimes from some distance too. But his biggest assets are his combination of size and speed. The Flyers do not have other guys who can really back off other teams, force the back in from the blue line. Tippett can do that. He's a good power play entry guy, can just slice through the defense. So even when he's going through stretches where he just is struggling to put shots on net, just the speed that he brings and his size and his physicality, because he's had a really physical playoffs when he's been in the lineup. They miss all those things. But he's clearly not healthy as that Penguin series rolled along. I said to several people that you have to do a double take and just make sure that wasn't Scott Hartnell there. With how many times you talk about it wasn't Hartnell down, it was Owen down, right? Over and over and over again, he just kept blowing a tire, which told me that he couldn't could dig into the ice, right? He was losing an edge all the time. That's not him. So, and he was taking a ton of maintenance days late in the regular season. He clearly slowed down near the end. He was hurting then. I think he got worse as the Penguin series rolled along. So having him out on the ice, not able to be effective, that doesn't help him, doesn't help the team. But theoretically, though, his theoretical ability to gain entry in the zone, create a threat, and they said dole out some physical play and hitting game that the Flyers absolutely missed those things sorely. And I said, no one on the wing is scoring, so he very well might help in that regard.
Yeah, so with that, just a prediction, do you see the Flyers beating the Hurricanes in game four and forcing a game five, or do you feel that Carolina has this in hand? Because to quote one thing that was lip read off of what Tim Stützle said from the last series between Ottawa and Carolina, because of the way Carolina plays the neutral zone, there's just no way to get around them.
Yeah. I mean, Carolina's a very good hockey team and a well-coached hockey team. They're not the late 70s Montreal Canadiens. They're not the Edmonton Oilers. They're a good team, but they'll give up their chances too. They're not a team that's loaded with future Hall of Fame talent or anything like that. What I'm saying is that they're human. I mean, when you look at the way the series has gone, the Flyers haven't done enough, obviously, clearly, in any. I mean, game one was just lopsided. It was worse than the 3-0 score looked. Once again, though, talking about inability to finish chances, right? Third period, you're losing 3-0. You're killing a penalty first minute of the third period. You have a 2-on-1, a shorthanded 2-on-1. You don't score on it. I don't know that it's going to change the outcome down 3-1, but I know the third period comebacks quite often start with a play like that in the opening minute of the period, right? The Flyers have not scored. The Flyers have, when I look at both series, And at this point, you're talking about what, nine playoff games to date. They don't have a true transition goal, not one. And they've had plenty of opportunities, but haven't finished on any of them. If they could change that course somehow, then I think there's a roadmap to winning the game. When I look at it logically and how it's gone, you know, how games have gone, and once Carolina gets up on you, I mean, logically, you know, looking at it that way, LaFarge might have a hard time. But you know, by the same token, I think Sarah Valley put that out that since they went to all best of seven series, no team has actually started with eight straight wins. Now, Carolina might be the first, but you know,
Colorado could be the second, depending on how things
Colorado
go
could be the second
Saturday
one.
night,
Yeah,
too. Yeah.
I mean, you never know. You know, I went into the series the way I had it in my head. I thought they would split in Carolina and split in Philly. Okay, now Carolina, you lose in overtime. And I still think they could split in Philly. Now, I don't think, I don't think it's coming back here for a game six. But
Yeah.
I would not be shocked if the Flyers were able to pull together enough to pull out a game. So I see them pulling out four straight wins. No,
So with that, we're going to do a quick transition. That's Flyers Hurricanes talk. Real quick, the Canadians just scored an empty netter. It is now 5-1 with 3:38 left in game two. So it will most definitely be a tied series between Buffalo and Montreal. And then, of course, and who knows, it says 9:30 start time. It probably will really start at like 10 o'clock at night, but the Golden Knights will take on the Anaheim Ducks in Anaheim for game three of their series, which is tied at one. And I'm actually now going to use this as an opportunity to a transition over to the PWHL. They made a major announcement, but real quick, we just have a final now. The Ottawa Charge defeated the Boston Fleet 2-1. Ronja Savolainen just scored with 28.1 seconds left in regulation to give the Charge the 2-1 victory and the 2-1 series lead. So going into game four, they will now have the opportunity to eliminate the Fleet and move on to the PWHL Walter Cup final for the second year in a row if they can get past the Fleet in game four. And started already, it is still scoreless in the second period. The Montreal Victoire, who has a 2-1 series lead over the Minnesota Frost, is looking to make their first ever appearance into the PWHL Walter Cup final. And of course, if they do, there will be a guaranteed new champion as Minnesota is the defending two-time champions. So that is what's going on right now, game-wise. The Charge just won 2-1 to take the 2-1 series lead, and Montreal and Minnesota are currently scoreless with Montreal up with the 2-1 series lead. So we'll know tomorrow morning before this podcast comes out if Montreal was able to pull it out or if Minnesota tied the series at two games apiece to force the pivotal game five, because they are best of five in the
Yes.
PWHL. And speaking of the PWHL, the other day, or Wednesday now, 2 days ago at the time of the release of this podcast, the PWHL Detroit is officially announced as an expansion team. They did the unveiling with a press conference at 10 a.m. at the Little Caesars Arena at the Fox Theater. They also announced that the award ceremony and the PWHL draft will be taking place in Detroit in June. And per Ian Kennedy of the Hockey News, it is sounding like that there will be three more teams that will be joining the league going into the 26-27 season. And it is looking to be like San Jose, Vegas, who is the only one on this list, and that's including Detroit, who did not have a single PWHL takeover tour date, and Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. So you're kind of fixing some of your travel logistics by putting a couple teams out west. Hamilton's a little bit of the wild card for me a little bit. I would have probably maybe gone with Denver, but it's very interesting seeing where things are going in terms of expansion for the PWHL to go to 12 teams.
Yeah, it's been a huge year for women's hockey. Really good playoffs last year, PWHL. The Olympics, you know, the Olympics are time when all eyes are actually, you know, on the women's tournament as well as the men's tournament. Outstanding hockey. in the Olympic tournament. The viability of the league is no longer a question mark. It's here to stay, and the takeover tour was an enormous success. So yeah, I don't think they're done growing yet. Honestly, I think it's just going to continue to expand, and it's a great thing to see. It's a great thing for the game. In terms of the markets, I find myself wondering. It's inevitable that whenever the next NHL expansion is, I don't know, 2 years, whatever it might be, Houston will be one of the teams. I wonder if the NHL gets to Houston first or the women's team there first.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting. I know they're going to stop at 12, and they're going to stay at 12 for a few years because they want to like really build it up after that point before they do more expansion for the league itself. And as you mentioned with the takeover tour, I mean, I was at the one in Washington, D.C. Set the U.S. attendance record, and it was amazing. And then also, it just should be noted that when you look at like the Montreal Minnesota series, I believe both or at least two of the three games have gone to overtime. Mm-hmm. And I believe the most recent one, if I'm remembering right, don't kill me if I get it wrong, everybody, went to like three overtimes. Yeah. So I believe game three was three overtimes. And because I know the first game was a one overtime period. I remember because I had finished playing in my two hockey games, which we got shellacked really badly. Mercy ruled in both. And I'm at my friend's place for their housewarming party, and I'm just kind of off into a room by myself watching Victoire and the Frost on my phone while they're playing in overtime. So that just tells you just how, I mean, and then you look at what Montreal Ottawa did last year in the semifinals, where every game was like a multi-overtime game.
Yeah,
because of great, amazing goaltending.
I said it's just captivating hockey. I mean, and the caliber of play every year. I mean, it's already quite good, and it's been good for a while. But it seems like it just continues to get better. I mean, these are some really fun hockey games to watch. One of the good things when you don't have a dog in the fight is you can actually enjoy games sometimes for the game itself. I love that nervous excitement of having an emotional stake in a game, but in terms of being able to pull back and just enjoy it for the hockey, for the sport of it, for the drama of it, you're not as closely connected to it. You can actually evaluate the hockey on its own level. And I'll tell you, like I said, these have been some great games. So,
And here's the thing. I know everyone, because I remember I put the thing about the PWHL Detroit because I wrote the article real quick. Because I didn't even know that it was happening. I didn't. Yeah, I mean, right. I got the email, but I didn't see the email until I just got the YouTube notification. Oh, PWHL live for announcement. I'm like, oh, okay. I remember I sent the article into the one group chat I'm in, and they're like, all right, well, when's DC? And I'm just like, it ain't gonna happen for a while. DC ain't happening for, like, DC will happen. I just don't see it right away because there's other issues that need to be sorted out in this area before we can have a women's team in the DC metropolitan area.
Right.
But then at the same time, as you were saying about not having a team in the fight, as a Capitals fan who is wearing a Flyers jersey for the podcast because of said guest who's on the show, I have to make sure I'm looking at the camera the right way. I'm kind of relieved that the Caps aren't in the playoffs because I'm able to relax for in a while.
Yeah.
And, the only reason I feel a little bit wound up is just because, the Flyers is my dad's team.
Right.
It's not just because I get to talk to you about the Flyers, but, now my dad's back home. I get to watch the game with him. I get to hear the chirping and the complaining. It's like, this is what I've been missing the last 2 months of my life. And it's like, so it's nice to get a little riled up a little bit, but then at the same time, it's also nice to not have that dog in the fight. So you can just watch and just enjoy the hockey.
Exactly.
So 2018 for me though was the most stressful I've ever been.
Yeah.
Until they won the cup, it was the most stressful I'd ever been in. So with that, Bill, where can the people find you on social media and your work, good sir?
So they can find me on Twitter X at Bill Meltzer, on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. On the web, you can find me on PhiladelphiaFlyers.com. 5 days a week during the playoffs, six sometimes 7 days a week. For the duration of the playoff run here. I'm also the content manager of FlyersAlumni.net at the official site of the Flyers Alumni Association. Also the assorted Flyers Alumni social media. I'm the COO of Hockey Hot Stove, hockeyhotstove.com, and our other assorted social media. So yeah, it's good though.
Yeah,
Good kind of busy.
I do my best to try to tag y'all as best as I can when we post these out, because it's just like the Hockey Hot Stove TXHT show in a way.
Perfect. Perfect. I love it.
But with that, Bill, it's always a pleasure. And of course, you can follow us at TXHT underscore hockey, TXHTHockey.com, at the Lindenbaum 75. And so with that, until next time, we will see you on the ice.